Hi, my name is Seeth Mann. I was the director of this episode of The Wire.
And I'm George Pelicanis, writer for the show, and I produced this episode.
That's Donnie and the gurney. And this is the location where previously there was a shootout in an apartment and Omar jumped out the window, unbelievably, to his attackers and to us. He was nowhere to be found on the ground when they looked out. So now they're looking for him frantically.
Seeth, is this handheld here?
Yeah, this is all handheld.
I remember it was a very tight space, right? We couldn't really set up or anything. It had to be done like this.
Yeah, it was very tight.
Gotta be somewhere.
That row house was filthy. Real location. All real location.
Officer Smith, ma'am.
This is Monk posing as an officer, trying another tack to find Omar, who's in the wind.
Yeah, that's terrible. Is the woman all right?
Huh?
The woman, is she all right?
Yeah, she good.
I love how he just really didn't care once he didn't get anything.
Yeah, she good.
Excuse me, my brother Omar Little came here last night.
It was actually hard. We had a lot of trouble finding an emergency room that we could shoot in.
You know how. Probably messed up his name.
You know, because they need to be working emergency rooms. This is actually shot second unit by Joe Chappelle, because we couldn't lock one down in time for principal photography.
Not a goddamn thing. Been in every trash can, dumpster, vacant for 3 blocks.
That's nice right there.
The reflection.
Yeah, you got them both in the shot.
Yeah.
Marlon, I want to meet. So what you want us to do?
Now this is all beated out ahead of time, right? Do you guys have like a writing conference before the season begins, George?
Yeah, by this time, this was episode 6. By this time in the season, it's a little more compressed and we're running up a little bit closer to the episode, so we get into a room and we try to beat out an episode in about 2, maybe 3 days. And that entails a scene-by-scene diagram of the episode. We start by putting cards up on a board, different color cards, and you have different cards for police, the drug dealers, Omar gets his own color, the educators, that kind of thing, the kids. And then those cards go up on a board in order.
Mm-hmm.
Day 1, night 1, day 2, night 2, like that. And when you're done, you've got about 35, ideally, sometimes 40 scenes up on this board. Then you transpose it to paper and you hand it to the writer and you say, go write the script. And you can deviate a little bit, but you know, it's not a stone cold diagram, but you basically want to stay to the beat sheet if you can.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the fire and the fury.
I always love watching the title sequence every season, trying to locate what episodes, which shots are from. You know, after 5 seasons of the show, it's really, you know, fun for me in terms of knowing the shots that are from the first season, second season, third season, and then the shots you haven't seen yet because you don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and actually in this credit sequence, there's a shot from your episode.
There it is.
Right there. And the SUV blowing up as well.
Oh, yeah.
Matter of fact, I think there's a lot of shots in here from your episode.
Yeah. Ed Burns wrote this episode.
Yeah, this is just before Ed went off to Africa.
Usually my staff tries to keep sharp objects out of my hands.
You know, it all started with Charles Center and Tommy D'Alessandro, and it continued with William Donald.
The whole red ribbon thing was, you know, interesting for me. Like, we were talking about what color to make that ribbon, and we were like, well, it has to be red just to tie into what was going on with McNulty and the homeless murders, quote unquote.
Westport, revitalizing another waterfront area of our
state. Right, yeah. You know, I didn't even notice that. That's good.
Say goodbye to Memphis.
Was that Vince? Is he in on that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Vince Peranio, art director. And there's Nick Spotka from season two making a cameo.
Yeah.
Who the hell's that?
Oh, that's nobody.
Now, did you guys decide ahead of time which characters from previous seasons were going to get their farewell nod in this season? Or was it episode by episode?
You know, I think that was mainly David, I think, trying to give everybody their propers and, you know, bring them back on stage just to show what happened to them. And Baltimore is a small town, so they would be in the world still.
Mm-hmm. This is great work by Michael K. Williams as Omar. This scene also directed by Joe Chappelle. They did an excellent job. You know, you see him having jumped out the window. One of the things I remember David Simon talking about in the Tone meeting was the whole mythology of Omar, you know, who's become this living legend in Baltimore, and now he's even jumped out of a window. So this is like the human side of him, seeing him frail and broken and, you know, really in pain. And it's interesting as the episode goes on, watching him, like, posture through his own mythology as he tries to get back on the hunt, like he has to, you know, fake it a little bit to try to get his revenge.
It's hard to see him like this. It's kind of like in Atlantic City when Burt Lancaster gets beat up as an old man. You know, you don't want Burt Lancaster to get beat up. You don't want Omar with a broken leg.
You do not want Omar with a broken leg. And here we realize he was hiding under the building the whole time. I dare say Omar is probably the most beloved character of all the characters among the fans.
Yes. You called the reporter, huh? No, actually. That asshole's making up his own shit. Brass called a press conference this afternoon. I'm gonna be shoveling so much money at my bullshit it'll make your head spin. What's with all the casework?
Bodies from the vacants.
The dynamic between Bunk and McNulty this season has been really interesting.
Yeah.
You know what, Jimmy? I'm gonna go back to the beginning.
I mean, here at this point, McNulty's still cocky. The downside of this scheme hasn't begun to hit on him yet, you know. But it's been real cool to see Bunk just doggedly working this case in his own way and standing his moral ground.
Yeah. And, you know, for me, it's really interesting because as upset and disenchanted as he is with McNulty, he's still not gonna dime him out. You know what I mean? It's like he's gonna do his thing, but he's not gonna, you know, which really speaks to their level of friendship, even though he's disgusted with him this whole season, you know. It's also, I guess, the code of police as well.
To be that close to a serial killer must be weird.
Kinda, yeah. Wonderful story, Scott.
Yeah, well, kinda wrote itself. I mean, it's a lucky thing to have the guy call me like he did.
Well, it comes from you pounding the pavement, right? That's more than luck. That's putting yourself.
I don't know if people know, but we built this set.
Oh, yeah.
To replicate the Baltimore Sun. And they went into the Sun. They took probably hundreds of photographs. And if you were to walk through this set, things that the viewers never see, just the little things on people's desks and the photographs tacked to the corkboard and all that, it's been done with a lot of care. Very deliberate, and they did a beautiful job.
Yeah, they did. I remember the support the staff signs they had up, which I thought was just so poignant in terms of how the newspaper's being gutted and everything like that.
I mean, I'm just not all that comfortable having myself in the...
You know, I saw the set, I thought it looked amazing, then I went to the real Sun, and I thought it looked even more amazing because it was so close, like they just lifted it out of the real Sun and transported it over to the stage.
Yeah. About that.
Homelessness.
Our coverage should reflect the Dickensian aspect of the homeless, the human element. Scott will lead it off, spending a night on the streets and writing from that perspective.
Scott, he's the lead on your education project. I think we need to get him back on the...
I don't see the school project as yielding the same kind of impact as our attention to homelessness can. These murders, the phone call to our reporter, really opens up the issue, don't you think?
Well, yeah, but
from now to the end of the year, let's focus not only on covering the murders, but on the nature of homelessness itself.
The Dickensian aspect of it, yeah.
Clark has done a great job all season in this role, and,
mm-hmm.
you know, when you're on set, it wasn't always apparent the depth of his performance. What I'm saying is that when you're watching in the monitor, sometimes you don't even see it.
Mm-hmm.
But after it was shot and cut together, you would see things in his eyes that you didn't see on the set, obviously because you weren't right up on top of him. It's a very layered performance, all told.
Yeah, he was really great to work with. You know, for me, working with him, knowing what a great director he is, you know, it was a little bit like, okay, you know, how's it going to be? And he was just fun. And it's one of the things I've heard about him is how he keeps a very relaxed set. And I could see in his approach to performing in the scenes what a kind of lighthearted, smart guy he was. And great actor. And these two also.
I'm running an illegal wiretap on Marlo Stanfield's cell phone.
Fuck, Lester.
If you have a problem with this, I understand completely. And I urge you to get as far fucking away from me as you can.
Corey Robinson, graduate of DeMatha High School.
Oh, did he go to DeMatha?
Oh, yeah. I had to put that in there. Oh, yeah, he's a local guy.
I'm from Silver Spring. While we're shouting out Maryland folks.
You remember this one here? I backed away from jacking the boy up out of respect for that goofy motherfucker, Press Belusky. Wonder what the young man might tell me a year later, though. Well, what the fuck is this?
Vernon here did a search warrant on his dead.
There's a look the Wendell Pierce gives right here that I found so, you know, for me it was just very telling about the nature of police. When they tell him Prop Joe died, that look right there.
Somebody finally touched Prop Joe, huh?
It's not sentimental, but it's kind of a acknowledgement. It's sort of respectful, you know what I mean? But still just kind of professional and distant in a way, you know, like the man is dead.
Somebody touched Prop Joe.
Yeah.
And that's it. You know, there's not going to be anything else said.
Yeah.
All right, then. You want a drink with that?
It's strawberry lemonade. All
right, I want it.
They're back on cell phones after more than a year?
That they are.
Tell me they're talking in code, Lester. I want to go to jail for snatching something better than Marlo Stanfield's fucking lunch order.
There's no code that I can tell. I got a half dozen calls, all routine. No drug talk, no numbers, no times. Nothing but what they seem.
So he ain't doing business with the phone then. So take this mess down. Let's get the fuck out of here.
I also have five calls, 30 to 40 seconds duration. Each one picked up on
now,
the first ring.
The clock signal, what they're doing, is that based on a real code or system that was used?
But there are calls where no one says
no.
Thing.
We have in the past, you know, taken from actual cases that Ed worked and so on, but this is something that we invented in the writer's room.
Is he?
We talked it through.
And believe me, we came to it after a lot of long head scratching. It was a tough one to do. The show's called The Wire. Every year you got to come up with something like this.
Marlo's not going to talk dirt.
And it got a little more difficult as the years progressed. But I think it was Ed one day came in and he said, I got it. Ed will go home and just think about the show all night and then just come in. And he walked into the writer's room and he started drawing clocks, I remember. And so that was Burns.
And they do, I'll peel off a couple of detectives.
Ed Burns, that's my man.
Homeless murders? How does that case tangle in with this?
Hard to explain.
I love that right there when he said hard to explain, didn't look back at him or anything like that. It's like they've brought him in, but they're still protecting him from knowing everything, you know.
Something downtown and stick your name on it. Get the crime to go down and stay away from schools.
And keep my boyish good looks.
One out of four ain't bad.
Jesus.
Do we have
now,
a schedule
assistant? He's going to go into this room, and maybe you can talk about how you shoot a scene like this. And I don't think people realize the work that's involved when you've got inserts in the crowd,
mm-hmm.
and you've got to go from here to other places and so on. And there's a lot of people to shoot. It probably took us, what, 4 or 5 hours to shoot the scene?
Yeah, it was a long time. When you're attacking a scene like this, definitely you want to get a sense of the scope, how many people are there. So, you know, your wide shots are very important. Like shots like this, insert the crowd, looking in all directions. Even a shot like that, which is tight, but gives you still the texture of that camera in the foreground. Shots like this are so important to just set up the environment, you know what I mean? But you still want to get in to people's faces to get the impact. And you want a lot of shot size variety because it is a long speech, you know what I mean? So you want to be able to do just this, to sit on Rawls and Daniels and get their reactions and move around. You know, you don't want it to be stagnant.
We try to move them away from downtown, away from
I love Reggie Caffey.
Away from our schools, away from
he's
our
great.
Homes. If you were to judge our society,
he's such a operative, you know. He says a lot without saying much with his face.
Very expressive.
Yeah.
But I am also someone who ran for public office because I
so you know, you want to get a lot of shot variety and a lot of reactions as well. And then you want to pick your places to do something particular, like here where we push in, because he was reaching that moment in the speech where he's really being passionate.
That is my test. Somebody is killing homeless men in this city.
I wanted these microphones to get really kind of big in the frame, because it's so much about media, recording the media and spinning things for the media. You have my
word on this. And then you pushed in there as he was really coming to the crux of his speech.
Yeah.
What got into you?
What?
I want to assure the public that we are doing everything possible in our power to apprehend this subject. Homicide detectives are working around the clock.
In the audience, there's Bill Zorzi, one of our writers.
Yes.
And a political reporter for The Sun for many, many years.
But with that caveat, I will take questions.
And Bill has been acting this season, too, in our show, and he's done a great job. We can only hope that now that he has a job on our show that he can afford a pair of socks, maybe. You know, we're hoping for that anyway.
I don't know.
I think Deputy Commissioner Daniels is in a position to elaborate on that.
I love that moment right there when he just, you know, throws Daniels under the bus. Daniels has no idea he's about to be put on
we'll
the spot.
Whatever help is offered. Certainly our detectives will work closely with the behavioral analysis unit at Quantico.
Deputy, even with all the resources at your disposal, isn't it extremely difficult to catch a serial killer?
Our ability to secure genetic material and the growing DNA data bank. Our assets unavailable to us even a few years ago. And our ability to effectively...
That's nice there. Yeah. Carcetti's looking at him like, yeah, this guy's got it, man.
Mm-hmm. Of course, we have some of the best criminal investigators in the nation working 24-7. As the mayor made very clear a moment...
Lance Reddick is fantastic. I remember the first time I met him. I've only seen him on the show. And I was struck by how even his body language is completely different out of character versus in character. I love the way Bill Zorzi throws his arm up when he asks that question right before the scene ended. Mm-hmm.
This is a tough scene for our viewers because they're seeing Randy for the first time since last year.
Yeah.
The young man who plays Randy has gotten more buff and so on, a lot tougher looking.
Yeah.
And it's completely fits what's happened to him in his life.
Yeah.
Never goes off the books.
It's tragic. I mean, because one thing, Randy, when we first met him at the beginning of season 4, you know, just this beautiful smile, you know, and this entrepreneurial spirit and dreams and aspirations. And this is who he is now, hardened, cold. And it's all defensive. I mean, he needs to be that way for the environment. And I mean, he... You know, in some ways, ended up there because he talked to the police, so.
All of them who thought it was.
Right.
Certainly can't do that again.
They end up catching a charge, and they get time behind it.
Time, huh?
Nice body language there, right?
Mm-hmm.
You gonna give me time?
Just shutting him out.
Mm-hmm. Wouldn't sit when he offered him a seat.
If you know something about that boy Lex getting shot, now is your last chance to speak to that. You gave a statement last year.
Why don't you promise to get me out of here?
That's what y'all do, ain't it? Lie to dumbass niggas.
Bunk realized he can't reach him.
Yo, y'all need to get this police out of my face before I bank his ass.
I love that look from Wendell Pierce right there. He did a lot of really good work on this episode.
Kiddo, you had a meeting out of your hand.
It was great for me because I didn't actually get to work with either Dominic or Wendell on the first episode I did. That was the season you guys were shooting a lot of Dominic's stuff on different units because he was in England, I think. But they were both really excellent.
But other than that, deputy, two great actors there.
Mm-hmm.
They were favorites of ours because when those guys had a scene, you know, they were going to do it right. It was going to be done correctly. You know, there weren't a lot of takes. Just very good actors.
Is it enough that we're up on the killer's cell phone?
John Doman's another one who, knowing him from his character, before meeting the man, just a little bit intimidated because his character's such a prick.
Yeah, and John is a genuine tough guy. He's an ex-Marine, and so he is, you know, nice guy.
Nice guy.
But tough guy.
Yeah.
From both ends. It's what we would normally do.
Nothing about this is normal. Baltimore Sun reporter's phone is problematic. We need to strike a balance between your needs as investigators and the First Amendment rights of the Sun and its sources.
The First Amendment does not guarantee privacy, Your Honor. Legal precedent clearly indicates...
Look, I'm not saying that we can't, but... But what? Until we get the sense that your suspect is changing phones, I'm not inclined to look with favor on tapping the Baltimore Sun's telecommunication.
Well, we're afraid to piss them off?
Never pick a fight with anyone who buys ink by the barrelful.
There's some bad blood between the judge and McNulty that goes back to season one, and that sort of comes out again in this scene.
Mm-hmm. That's one of the things that I always love about the show is the collection of history.
How many enemies do you need?
Here's another moment right here.
Deputy.
You know, there's a history in this triangle because Perlman used to have an affair with McNulty and now she's with Daniels and nobody says anything, but you can tell in their interaction, you know, what's going on. And if you hadn't watched it previously, you know something went on.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's just such good storytelling that you don't explain everything and just let the behavior carry the moment.
What's up with you?
Got all 22 out the drawer, huh? Working the whole mess at once.
Well, I'm trying to see him fresh.
25, my triple. Comes back to Marlowe and his people.
For sure.
Good informant tells me so.
This is nice. You kind of get some refired up on the case by reminding him who he is, the bunk.
The bunk.
His girl, his muscle. Left little kids alive, so I guess he ain't all bad. People out there are so scared of this motherfucker, I can't get close to an eyewitness on any of them. Where you at with the rest of these cases?
You know, we don't even have lab work on 14 of these bodies. A year later, I'm still walking in written requests to Lance and watching him just file them away in his drawer.
McNulty would have called a news report on that shit.
I am not him.
Well, what would the bunk do? Take no for a fucking answer?
We had cutbacks. You know that. We lost 3 or 4 trace examiners.
This guy's pretty interesting. You know, Bill Murray wasn't available, so we cast him in this role. He does remind me of Murray a little bit.
Yeah, I hadn't thought it, but as soon as you said it, I know exactly what you're talking about. I like this lab shooting through those shelves and that side shot. It's often good when you can get some foreground texture, you know, in a shot. Which is why I'm a fan of the dirty overs.
What
the fuck you say?
After Annette took retirement, the casework got backed up worse than ever, right? Well, we put in to fill the lab assistant slot, but with all these cutbacks, the best they could give us was a temp.
A temp?
Yeah. No medical, no pension. A temp hire to get us over for a while. Come on, I'll show you something.
I talked right over it. One of my favorite lines is in that scene, "My heart pumps purple piss for you."
You know, from each of the 14 scenes.
There were a lot of options in this facility for our lab location, but again, Vince Piranio pointed out that the blue in here really made it, on a sort of subconscious level, made it feel like police, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like the importance of the color scheme was helpful. You know, I think he's wonderful at building on what's there. So the color palette was there. All he had to do was come in and add the stickers, police logos and things, and it just works. I think it's actually Hopkins or something like that. I can't remember where we were. I love when Bunk spun around. That shot there, for me, was, you know, seeing him through the glass before he walks into Landsman's office. Like, I think he's still kind of unclear. He thinks that because he's got this thing on the front page of the paper, everything's going to be open now. He's going to be able to get the resources he needs. And then he, you know, gets it all cleared up for him. It's still not enough to fight through all that bureaucracy, which, you know, helps push him deeper down the hole.
Bullshit.
I don't know. I thought the mayor gave a very nice speech. I, for one, was moved, much like the bull to which you just referred.
Tell you one thing.
What's that?
Motherfucker's got the connect. He the one that did Joe.
Oh, no doubt.
So this is the first New Day Co-op scene after Proposition Joe got murdered.
Do you like coming into scenes with movement of the camera?
Yeah, I do. Not all the time, but I know there especially I wanted to some way point to Joe's absence. You know what I mean? To like really kind of feel his void.
Right, it's shorthand.
Yeah. But yeah, often I do. It's interesting, too, for me, too, to see, like, that lab scene. In the coverage, there was a big, wide moving shot to come into it. But they started, you know, in the final cut right in on the guy's face. And, you know, sometimes it's not necessary. Like, I think it works the way they came in. It was kind of abrupt, which felt good. This is Jamie Hector. I got to say something about Jamie. He and I came up together. We did a short film called Five Deep Breaths. And we met on that film, and this is, I guess, our third time we've worked together. He's just a tremendous actor and a great friend.
And actually, that's how we found both of you guys, I think.
Yeah.
Watching that film.
Yeah.
If I'm not wrong, we were looking at him as an actor, and that was his reel, in effect, was your short. And then when we saw it, we said, who's this guy who directed this? And that was our introduction to you, and that was the spark that got us all involved together, I think. Isn't that right?
Yeah. It was Bob Colesbury saw the short, and, you know, he met with me, and then he brought it to you guys, and really just been my angel, literally. I have to give a lot of thanks to Bob Colesbury and to you guys for helping me get started.
Well, you know, here's the time also to say that for people that are watching this that are trying to break in and so on, I just want to say that you did a lot of work before you actually signed on as a director with us. You came to set, you watched a lot of the shooting, you actually were here for an entire episode where you were just... Who was directing that episode, Seath?
I came for two episodes.
Was that Ernest Dickerson?
Ed Bianchi was the first, and then Ernest Dickerson directed the second.
Okay.
And then I shadowed Ernest again in post on a third episode when I couldn't make it down to the set for the production of it. And it was great for me.
Oh, absolutely. And it also told us a lot about your character, too, and how hard you were willing to work. And it paid off for us because you've just done a great job.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, man.
Yep.
It's been tremendous for me. I mean, The Wire is where my career got started.
Agree, that's what we do. But very rarely does a reporter end up being in the middle of a story, an ongoing story about a murderer who is still at large and posing a severe and deadly risk to the...
You should have heard Phelan this morning. Too scared to tap the newspaper. Folks.
This was a late night. This was after we shot on Federal Hill, if I'm not mistaken,
right.
Top of Federal Hill that night. And it was getting late, so these guys are looking a little half in the bag, but a lot of it's being tired, too, I think.
Yeah.
It won't go beyond me and Greg's.
You and Sidnor will have to work it as best you can for right now.
And it works because they are tired at this point. I know McNulty's, you know.
They need another body, don't they?
I'll call our men in the southern.
We had trouble finding this location, remember?
Yeah. Did we scout this the night before we shot it?
Something like that. It was real tight. We had a place originally that was next to a club, a nightclub, that I think we were going to shoot on a Friday night or something like that.
Right.
And there's no way we could have done it.
It's like old times for me and you, huh?
That's right.
Whatever you want, it's yours, all right?
Well, tonight.
Yeah, it was going to be too loud. So Grady robs him with a bottle.
A little something.
What's that?
My word in your ear.
Again. Do you remember that Omar, he was hiding back in this kind of enclave there?
Yeah.
And a rat ran across Michael's feet when he was waiting to for the shot. And he kind of jumped out of there. he was in that rat's home, you know.
I'll tell him. Right. I will.
Pick up your keys and go inside, yo.
And see pain in his face.
You killed Joe? Hungry? Didn't think so.
Now he can
look. That's great.
What now?
It's more than one way to skin a case.
Already ran them for Pryor's, right?
Pryor's, yeah. But I'm gonna run every name you guys developed through the entire database. Not just for Pryor's, but for anything at all in the Miles system. Court appearances, parole, probation, gun permits, DOC, open bails.
You're playing long shots, huh?
Darling, I'm playing the hand I've been...
You know, it really makes you realize how heroic good police work is in a sense. I mean, you get the sense that, you know, on one hand, you've got McNulty making up lies to get, you know, to get officers paid so they can do their work. And then you've got, you know, Bunk just fighting against everything, no resources to help him. He can't get his lab reports. He can't get cooperation from his department. And it's really, it's depressing.
In the Pentecostal church where I was given religion, it would have been said the spirit was on you yesterday.
It got good to me.
Let praises be.
I don't know. It just pissed me off that on top of everything else I got to deal with, some nut job starts killing homeless guys. I mean, fuck already. How many shit bowls are there?
He's right, though. You were great. That passion was just the thing.
I love that. That passion was just the thing. It sounds so, you know, calculating. You know, you realize,
yep,
you know, how orchestrated everything is often in politics. You know, passion is just the thing. It was just such a telling line for me. And I mean, this scene, for me, it's like, at this point, you know, you've got McNulty, you know, creating and framing, getting in on it, you know, using these homeless murders to get what they need. And now the paper is going to use the homeless to get their Pulitzer, and now he's going to use the homeless to get into the governor's office, you know. And it's just like, it's just watching all these people, all these people, all these different institutions prey on, you know, the least powerful members of society, as Carcetti's described them. But they're all using them. They're all parasites, like, you know, the so-called serial killer that doesn't exist. And it's just very, you know, biting commentary.
That was Neil Huff playing the chief of staff, Steendorf.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy who was going to have sort of a minor role, but he did such a good job for us that his part got written up.
Yeah, he's great.
And it's happened to a lot of actors on our show, people like Anwan Glover, who plays Slim Charles, and, of course, Snoop, Felicia.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something I said?
No, it's Sidnor is bringing in a CI, and if you're here...
Shit. I'm sorry.
give you my list, okay?
No problem. We'll get right on.
Sorry, Lester, if I was intruding.
You couldn't know.
I love shooting in that detail office.
So why are you
She's
here?
Great.
If this is about Michael, what Cotton. He into, y'all should know he don't live here no more.
Actually, I'm following up on your man's case. You spoke to Detective Warden when it happened. Hmm? He was your boyfriend, right?
Yeah, when he worked in jail. Father to my youngest.
Well, you know how he died. Beaten bad. Crime of passion.
These are not sets, by the way.
Mm-mm. Didn't seem like he was home long enough.
This is just a typical small space in a row house in Baltimore that we shoot in regularly.
Let's put our cards on the table. I've been in this game longer than a little bit, and there's one thing I know from jump. You get a murder like this, there's bound to be a woman at the center of it.
I don't know nothing.
You know, my gut tells me that you do. Now, tell you what. We're gonna take a ride downtown, let you talk to the grand jury. You're not straight with them, they'll slap you with a material witness warrant. And you sit over at women's detention for a couple of weeks. It's amazing what it does for the grieving process. Get your things.
I ain't going no damn well.
It's me or the wagon.
Detective, I swear I ain't in this.
I love this scene with her.
It ain't me you want to talk to. It's the boy. He know.
And it's funny, I mean, I can't remember. There was a couple episodes ago where Michael tells her he's not going to pay her to be his mother, you know.
Right.
Which I thought was just such a telling moment. But even through all of her issues and, you know, trying to get money from her son and everything like that, there is that hesitation, that maternal instinct not to just give him up. You know, she could have ended this conversation a long time ago. And she tried in her way to protect him. But ultimately, she wasn't going to jail.
Add a minute or 60 times.
Got it.
Here it is, look at this. Single ring, connection, silence. What do you have?
Took these three. They're just hanging around.
What time did Monk leave?
1:24, 2 minutes later.
It's not what Marlowe's saying. It's what he's sending. Look him up.
Yeah. Text message.
Text? Need I remind you, Detective, these young men are products of Baltimore City schools. Besides, look how far away he's holding.
That's an Ed Burns line right there.
Far away to be reading the text.
Hilarious.
Pictures. Pictures.
And again, that there's that, you know, that sort of grudging respect for his adversary. This location was something.
It was brutal.
Yeah.
When we finally got the lights on under there, and all the needles and the vials and everything.
Oh, yeah, that's right. We had to, there was one section we were going to shoot, we had to just move because there was so many needles down there, it wasn't safe. This woman that he walks by on the tracks, that was an extra, but, you know, I wanted to use someone there because when I had gone down there to kind of just check it out on my own, and there was this woman laying in the middle of the tracks, and it was so sad. She just didn't move. And she didn't move most of the day we were there. I wasn't 100% convinced that she was still breathing. She finally did get up, but it was so sad.
What support do I get? One fucking detective.
This is nice. You did a real nice job. It's just a beautiful scene, and it was a very nice evening atop Federal Hill, too. It was a pleasure to be there and be outside and shooting there.
Beautiful.
I thought Dominic did a great job here. It's pretty hard to do a soliloquy, you know, like that.
That was a scene I was kind of worried about, and he just came in and killed it, you know. I really was blessed with him figuring some things out.
Oh, boy. You know, you're courting disaster when you have an animal in the scene, but yeah. that worked out all right.
Yeah. It took a couple of goes, though, with that dog. I can't remember what the thing. I think he would chase it first or something.
Why don't we go buy up a bunch
K-bar.
Of and take them to your kids?
Yeah.
You ain't hearing me. How can I go near my people with Omar and us?
How you gonna find out about them?
How we find out about the blind man?
You know, Banga, who plays Chris Partlow, is another local plug here. He was a champion wrestler in Montgomery County, Maryland, coming up.
Oh, really?
And you can see he's got the build for it. Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was a macho wrestler, man.
I didn't know that.
I believe he went to Magruder.
Okay. I didn't realize he was from Maryland.
Yep. Okay, so Seath, people who with eagle eyes will notice that this is really almost dawn here.
Yeah.
And we were fighting the light all along in the shot. And in order, you can only blow the car up once, so that had to be the last thing that we would do in the shot, mm-hmm. in the scene. And dawn was coming.
Dawn was coming. I was very nervous because, you know, you have to make sure everything's safe, you know, so everything takes a little bit longer. But you can see, I think it's in the last wide shot, you can really see the blue. There you go. You see
right,
that blue in the top left of the frame. You can see the light. The sun is rising.
It ain't about that paper. It's about me hurting his people and messing with his world.
We had a lot of guys audition for the part of the guy that gets shot. This guy really came in and did a wonderful job. Jeff Gibson and I, we were like, wow.
My sergeant and two side partners got here before me. Then the ship.
Now this guy lying down in the foreground.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, he wasn't lying there the way you wanted him to.
Oh yeah.
As much as he tried, he couldn't get it, and you actually did a belly flop to the ground yourself and landed in
yeah.
the position that you wanted him to be in, and that's how you got him to do it, right?
Yeah, it was, because, you know, it looked, the way he was laying looked staged, but I couldn't figure out exactly how to position him, and then I was like, well, it's just because he laid down, and it's really supposed to be he dropped, like, you know, his body gave up and he dropped, so I just dropped and figured that that would be... Right, you know, there was something too planned about the way he was laying. Yeah. That was funny. I didn't really think about it until I did it. And then I remember you saying something to me afterwards, like, you all right? And I was like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, who's going to direct this show if you're...
right.
If you're laid up.
Pictures, photographs on cell phones. Now, that means new PC to capture the photos and new equipment that can do it.
I love this scene between these two.
How do I write that into my bullshit homeless killer's MO?
Especially if you watched, you know, all five seasons.
You said all we needed were some bugs, a camera or two, and in a couple of weeks we'd have them. That's what you said.
Watching McNulty become a boss, sort of, in his own way.
To pay for that, but no, then you needed a... wiretap. So I went along with that. I got you the wiretap, but then you asked for surveillance teams. But before I could get to that, you came to me with this. I mean, what the fuck? I gotta tell you, Lester, I don't want to hurt your feelings, but I can see why Daniel's cringed every time you opened your fucking mouth. You're a supervisor's nightmare.
That's like the most ironic thing to come out of McNulty's mouth. I love that shot, how it passes from Lester to McNulty.
It'll be coded, probably. But I'm sure we can break it. That'll tell us how they do business, and usually that's enough. Or not.
Look, the truth is, I'm running Sid No Ragged, just staying on a couple of mopes and monitoring calls. Now, when we're up on their code, we're gonna need more manpower to run down a stash or a re-up. We can't do it all.
I can't juke this thing any more than I have. Last night, half the police department turned up at Oscar's crime scene before I could get there. We can't make another murder.
Thanks for the milk.
It's a donut without milk.
So you were talking then George.
Your second tour. Yes. The bad one.
Does Templeton lie in his report of this story? They don't want to hear it.
Who doesn't? He exaggerates it.
He does exaggerate it. Because I know there's go ahead.
Well, he kind of makes it. But you know, you hear what this guy's saying now, and then when he brings it back, it becomes more of a Black Hawk Down sort of thing.
Right.
It's much more dramatic than the way it actually happened. And what he's doing is he can't really help himself. He's got to embellish it. And the story would have stood on its own. It would have been just as good if he had just reported it in a straight way. But this guy's, that's what Templeton is. You know, he needs to take it to a step further, even if it means lying about it.
Anyway, we finished our sweep. Headed back in, right? It was all good. Then bam.
Our lead vehicle. And he's the celebrated journalist.
Blast tore the M50 gunner in half. Flipped the Humvee like a matchbox car. Driver lost both his hands. Blood shooting out all over. He's fucking laughing. Saying over and over, look, Mom, no hands.
I mean, how many Templetons do you think exist in the world of journalism? Do you think that's... that he's an anomaly, or that it's really common?
Well, I don't know how common it is, but certainly the last few years we've seen many examples of this. Whereas, I don't know, 20 years ago there were none. Mm-hmm. And you can take that even further into the publishing industry with all these fake memoirs and biographies that have been coming out.
Mm-hmm.
That never used to happen. People are lying to get the awards and to get more money. And it's just, you know, when you're talking about what's supposed to be an honorable profession, you know, it's a disgrace to the majority of the people who are doing their jobs right.
You think the... tendency towards a journalist as celebrity lends to that?
Yeah. I mean, pre-Watergate, journalists were just in the trenches doing their jobs, and then they became, you know, in the era of Woodward and Bernstein, who were doing straight reporting, but they became celebrities. And people have been trying to, you know, achieve that and reach that holy grail, and you know, a few of them have done so in the wrong way.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Scott, how's it coming?
Pretty good. Seen the art?
Yeah, good stuff. Listen, got a complaint about a story you wrote a couple weeks ago. One about the woman who died from an allergic reaction to seafood. You remember?
What about it?
A neighborhood lady who knows a dead woman's sister says our story made a lot of money for those kids. A scholarship fund we wrote out.
Yeah, so?
Well, she says his sister has a history of fraud.
Tom McCarthy's got a nice... sort of a blank expression there.
Mm-hmm.
He's starting to sweat a little bit.
Christ, who the fuck is that? I know. It's probably some old biddy talking about stuff she don't know, but maybe she'll go back and check with the family.
And at this point, I don't even think, right here, I don't think Gus is suspicious of him in this moment. I think he's just following up.
Right, he's doing his job.
Mr. Bobbles.
Actually, I'm not sure. They asked him if he wanted $100 to go someplace for dinner and talk. And
William Brooks.
You give him the 100?
I mean, he did a great job.
Stuffed it in his jacket.
This whole thing for me, it's like watching McNulty and Freeman kind of sell their souls a little bit at a time.
Yeah, it's like you're watching a train wreck before it happens or something. You tell them, you know, don't go there, but they're doing it anyway.
Who's gonna believe him? He's nuts.
How do you know he's nuts?
First of all, just look at him. He's fucking bouncing off the walls. Second of all, I've got his script. I called the university ER. It's an antipsychotic. So.
And this is where really where McNulty starts to lose his humanity by taking this step here.
Mm-hmm. Got that one from the first homeless death that Oscar gave us. One that was too rigged? Donald somebody or other. It had him in a Cleveland, Ohio shelter.
McNulty, you're deserving of serious psychological study.
You need PC to intercept cell phone photos. Well, here it is, right here. We send photos of this guy, all ribboned up from a dry cell phone to that goofy reporter, along with a message bitching about his stories. I ain't no pervert or whatever. Now, the killer says you ain't gonna find no more bodies, only photos of the victims.
Before they disappear. Look at this poor sucker. I don't believe we're gonna do this.
He disappears, the city goes batshit. You get your photo intercepts, and by the time we need to run down one of Marlowe's re-ups, you got all the manpower you need.
And Marlowe falls.
Falls hard.
And I mean, you know, on some level, I guess it's a tricky dilemma. You know, Marlowe is a pariah, but, you know, is catching him worth this guy? You know, kidnapping him, displacing him. Lester walking away is, you know, I guess he's kind of washing his hands of it, but he's the only person that could talk McNulty out of it, so he's just as guilty.
And the DNA from this scene, by the looks of it, we got a whole lot of DNA out of this mess.
Now, this is, of course, Michael's stepfather in those pictures, who Chris murdered. And it's the one time that you saw Chris actually get emotional when he was doing a murder.
Right.
I believe he spit on him after he killed him.
Yeah.
And that's going to be something that's going to come up later on in the series.
That was a powerful scene. It was really... You know, again, you understood in the way that he killed that man so much about what happened to him and how he became who he was.
Okay, Larry, we're good people here. It's all gonna be great. You're gonna like this place. It's warm, they got nice beds. Best of all, they gave you cash money just for walking in the door.
And I think McNulty here is explaining it to himself more so than Mr. Bobbles.
Right, he's trying to justify it.
And then he gives that little whimper. It's just heartbreaking. I love, Joe shot this scene as well. I love how he just put the camera in Mr. Bobbles' face, you know. Just put him right. So we had to confront him and what was really happening to him, despite whatever McNulty's saying in the background. The truth is in Mr. Bobble's face.
Out of respect for the distracted nature of Baltimore jury.
First, there's something else I need to bring up.
Old grand jury stuff?
Sealed indictments, sealed transcripts, dozens of them. Pulled from the desk of a shot-to-death drug dealer in East Baltimore. The deputy ops brought me those. We have a leak.
And he showed up outside where I work. He was confused, lost, I think. So I brought him here.
Yeah, that was wanting to come in on some movement to just show the space before we got into the meat of the scene, just to feel some texture of their environment.
And now, by shooting down on McNulty there, you're sort of...
Donald, do you
the framing sort of diminishes him a little bit too, doesn't it?
Yeah, that was actually, like, when I was thinking about the whole selling of the soul and him going down and down like that, you know, as we went, once we got on this track, I was trying to find opportunities to shoot down on him more and make him smaller in the frame. because of just what you said. There's actually a shot that's not in the cut. You know, when he leaves at the end, I put the camera way high on a scaffolding when he gets in his car at the end, just to make him completely tiny in the frame. But we didn't need it, because his face did it at that point.
Hey, Scotty boy.
Hey.
Hey, great piece. I mean, this one really feels like the real deal.
Great work.
Thanks. What I like most about it is that you didn't overwrite it. No extra color, no puffy adjectives, just tight declarative sentences. And you really let this ex-Marine just tell the story.
Thanks, Gus.
Hey, Mr. Slotman, read it and weep.
That's why I had the question of how much did he embellish it, because Gus, you know, who is a perceptive reader, read it as unembellished at that moment. And then I think it's, you know, maybe two episodes later when Hanning comes back.
Yeah, he wasn't suspicious at all at this point because it's a war story.
Right.
And there's no reason to doubt it. It's just, I think he's really talking more about the actual writing of it.
Right.
That it was lean and flowery or anything like that.
And that was something in the script, that he was pulling the crust off the bread, which I thought was so, you know, it was just so...
It's something a child does.
Yeah. And like, now, I don't think he's buying his own bull anymore.
No, we've got it. But thanks for bringing him in. Most people, they just ignore them.
He's killing me. He did a really good job. He said he really wanted to honor, you know, people who have those kind of issues in his performance, and I think he did. Yeah, I think he knows he's lost his humanity at that moment. That was his last chance.
Good choice to go out like that.
Yeah.
Well, Seeth, thanks for all the good work.
Thank you. Thank you. Seeth Mann, director. I'd like to thank George, David, Nina, Joe, everybody. I also like to give a special thanks to Baslyn Hewitt, my grandmother, who passed while I was working on this episode.
And this is George Pelikanis. Thanks for watching, everybody.